Hey guys, welcome to the Martial and Healing Arts channel. I'm Rafe Kelly, founder of Evolve Move Play. I'm extremely excited to be sponsoring this channel. Martial and Healing Arts have been key aspects of embodiment and self-cultivation for thousands of years. I have some of my best friends in the industry, Rory Miller, Matt Thornton, Edward Hines, presenting here, and I'm really excited to share what they have to say with you guys. You're gonna love it. So Evolve Move Play is an ecology of practices of movement, mindfulness, nature connection, and community. And within the movement, we have a big emphasis on moving in nature and being able to do parkour. We also like to lift weights and throw things around, but there's a huge aspect of martial arts, and I've been training martial arts since I was 6 years old. So it's really exciting to be able to sponsor this channel in particular. If you're interested in my work, check out my talks on the Main Stage and the Movement Anatomy channel. If you can't get to either of those live, you can check us out at Rafe Kelly on Instagram, get all your awesome embodiment giveaways. And for now, just enjoy this amazing channel. It's gonna be an awesome show.
All right, so we are joined here with Rory Miller. Rory has a long history in the martial arts and security, working for years in corrections as an officer and sergeant, including maximum security, booking, and mental health. He has led a tactical team, been a combat medic for the National Guard. For those of you outside the United States, that's a military group. And an advisor for the Iraqi correction systems, I'm assuming before Hussein. Or after Hussein. Rory writes and teaches on subjects ranging from defensive tactics and the use of force to first aid and crisis communications with the mentally ill. He's going to talk to us today about situational awareness. Welcome, Rory.
Thanks, Dom. Almost didn't look like you were reading that. That was great. Well done. Okay, so this is a Zoom, so like I can see Dan, I'm sure other people pop up, we'll be able to see. If you have questions, they should, if I understand this right, pop up in chat and Sarah will kick them to me. There's a whole bunch of training and teaching philosophy and what we're trying to do here. And I'm trying to take a 2-day class and get the good juicy bits you can work on your own out in an hour. But there's a whole bunch of teaching philosophy behind almost all of this. And these are scales, they aren't end states. It's not like there's some people are situationally aware and everyone else is oblivious. It's always a scale, which means you can always improve it. No matter how good you are, you can make it better. No matter how terrible you are, you can always get better. And if you choose to quit paying attention, you can always get worse as well. So number one, these are scales, they aren't end states. Number two, you're actually probably already good at this. You'll pay attention to things. You notice the things around you. We have this whole weird thing in the self-defense community that situational awareness is this magical, mystical skill. And I think the only reason that people think that is because most people that are good at it are subconscious. And because they're subconscious, they can't teach it for shit. And so you get this hand wavy. Am I okay with the language? Because it's probably going to get worse than that. So you get this hand wavy, you know, if anything deviates from normal, pay attention to that. And it's like, okay, so how do you find out what normal is in a new environment? What exactly does that mean? Everyone, well, you'll just figure it out because they don't know. So that's that I think is critically important. This is something you're already good at. Do you know when your kids are lying to you? You're already very high up on the situational awareness spectrum. You know, can you smell when something is different in your house? This doesn't smell right. I better go check and see if there's something electrical going on. We're good at this. So don't make it special. Don't make it mystical. Don't make it this whole big, huge thing. Because all this is basic being an organism. But we're putting it in context. And there's something about self-defense and martial arts that makes people that can do something every day suddenly think it's special. So, and we'll talk about that when we talk about the Cooper color codes, because if you want to see me just blow steam out my ears, bring that up. The other thing is that situational awareness is not just about bad things. It's being aware of the world around you, actually living in the world that you're in, living in your senses. And yeah, if you're only looking for bad, terrible stuff and looking for bad people and looking for danger, that's a horrible way to live. The bad guys have already won. If they're controlling your life, imaginary bad guys have already beaten you. But the skills of situational awareness are the same skills that let you know if your kid's starting to come down with something, if one of your friends just got their heart broken, is trying to hide it, that the leaves are coming out early this year, that sunset last night was spectacular. They're all the same thing. So do this. And this goes for anything you train, anything you do. You should do it because you love doing it, but not because you're afraid of something else. Fear is always toxic. I don't want to sound corny, but you should always train out of love, never out of fear. Fear will always fuck you up. So if we're ready to get started on the meat of it, when I talk about situational awareness, it is the bedrock to everything else, because anything you're unaware of, you can't deal with. You can't learn, you can't, if you can't see and you can't hear and you can't smell and you can't touch, you can't do, because you have no way of knowing what to do. So everything comes from your awareness first. In that pyramid though, awareness comes from your perception first. If your eyes are starting to go, you will not get as good information from them as you used to. Just is. If you're hearing, if you're an old guy that shoots too much, you're going to lose more information from your hearing than you used to. And that goes for touch, that goes for smell. So the first one is your senses. The better they are, the better they'll go. And there's some things you can do to help, some things you do to clarify. The second level though, the next thing up, is you have to actually pay attention to the senses. You actually have to use them. It doesn't matter how good your hearing is if you don't fucking listen. Doesn't matter how sharp you can have 20/10 eyesight, but if you spend it glued to a screen or you're sitting there thinking you're so much in your head that you aren't in your senses, it doesn't matter. It does not matter what comes in. And this goes to each of your senses. You should be playing with all of your senses all the time. So I'm going to start with the first exercise. And this will be a homework heavy class, so be ready to take notes, write down stuff. There's stuff I want you to do. This one we can do right here, right now. It's going to take maybe a minute, minute and a half. But get comfortable and shut your eyes. With your eyes shut, I want you to detect five sounds, five things that you hear. Can you hear the fan in the refrigerator? The electric humming from the lights? Is there a slight breeze? If nothing else, can you hear yourself breathe? Can you hear your heartbeat? Just five things. And keeping your eyes shut, five things that you feel. Can you feel the shoes on your feet or the ground under them? You can feel your shirt, assuming you're wearing one, on your shoulders. The seat you're sitting in. Where is the airflow coming from now? Where do you feel it? And again, if you really can't detect anything, can you feel the hairs in your nose move when you breathe? Five things. The hardest one is smell. And I don't think it's hard because we're terrible at smelling compared to dogs we are. It's because it's not something we consciously do, so we don't have a vocabulary for it. So it's like right now, I can smell my coffee in my cup over there, and I can smell both the acrid part of it, and there's also something. And again, we don't have language for it. There's something earthy underlying it. So there are two smells within that one smell of coffee. I can't put a name to them, but I can detect them. You know, do you smell yourself? Is it a bad smell or a good smell? What's around you? I can smell the dried plants that my wife likes to decorate with. So this is an exercise in meditation you can do regularly, but just put yourself in your senses. It is five things you feel, five things you hear, five things you smell. And it actually, if anyone cares, it comes from a manual on psychological first aid to help people that are really, really freaked out get into their senses. There's another exercise I encourage you to try, which is, I call it the three-way walk. But at some point when you're, next time you take a nice long walk, figure out where the breeze is coming from. And say, okay, nose, you warn me of anything coming from there. Ears, you take the other third. Eyes, you take the other third. And you walk, dividing your senses into, they aren't quadrants, I don't know what the word is for breaking things into third. But one, and nose is very dependent on air, so you have to always know where the wind is coming from. But have your nose take care of informing you, ears take care of informing you, and eyes taking care of informing you of three different places. The point is there are things that you play with, but get into your senses. And this is the second. Your senses have to be good, but you also have to spend time in your senses. And this, a lot of this is really hard to put into language because this is pre-language stuff. But that means not I'm sniffing things. It's like smelling without judging, without naming, without trying to put stuff in there, being in your senses. The model I use for most humans, the truly intuitive, when you're really in touch with yourself, there's no gap. You're thirsty, you drink. The next level up, the slight gap, which is still okay, is you're thirsty, you think I'm thirsty, and you drink. But what most of us do is I'm thirsty. Well, I've been thirsty before. I was more thirsty than this. It's not a big, and you start going through your history. And even worse is you start going through your history and then you start wondering what other people will think. Okay, well, yeah, I've been thirstier than this, but you know, I don't want people to think that I'm weak and I'm drinking because I'm weak. And do I really want water or beer? And is it too early to drink beer? What will people think? And this is where we start really fucking with our own heads. So that first step is clarity senses. Second step is being in them, being honestly in your senses. And you'll find this, I don't want to go off on too many tangents, but I can't seem to help myself. And Dan is laughing because he knows me. But this also works for emotional things. If you're going through an emotional pain, quit trying to fix it for a while and just sit in it and feel what it feels like. Don't try to judge it. Don't try to name it. Don't try to sitting in pain, sitting in fear, sitting in hunger. It changes your relationship to all of those sensations. And that makes a really good practice of that, this part I'm talking about being in your senses. Beyond that, pay attention. It's one of those, if something triggers, then you listen to it. We'll talk about setting baselines later. So only after that should you even consider trying to interpret it. Most people do the other way and they try to interpret it as soon as it happens. They spend more time interpreting, which means they're thinking, which means they're not perceiving. Okay, the minute you start trying to figure it out, you have dialed down your senses. You're no longer in your senses, which means from that point, you're become the primary stimulus. And if you're the primary stimulus, you are not accurately getting information. You cannot be situationally aware while thinking how good you are at being situationally aware. Can't be done. The number one thing that fucks up situational awareness is people being too cognizant of being situationally aware. You have to get into that moment. So I'm going to be jumping around a little bit. Again, in a two-day class, I'm seeing everyone's eyes. We can go into the appropriate tangents. This is a Zoom meeting. Can't do that as well. And so this is me teaching about situational awareness without any sensory input to do that with. So we'll see how that works out. So gone over the exercises. The pyramid that I like to use. How many of you have, which I can't see your hand, so this is a rhetorical question. How many of you are familiar with the Cooper color codes? Okay. Anyone in the self-defense community has heard about them. Every gun instructor talks about them. And it is one of the most worthless tits on a boar thing that I have ever been exposed to. It is simply saying, pay attention. If something draws your attention, check it out. If you need to do something, do something. Which every organism does automatically every goddamn time. But for some reason, if you call it a code or you put a TLA on it, TLA, of course, is a three-letter acronym for three-letter acronyms. Belabored, suddenly becomes tactical and everybody has to goddamn know it. Serenity now. But within that, it does give us one language, which I use for one thing, and this is the thing. you'll run into instructors that say you have to live in condition yellow, which is the code for, you know, pay attention, actually be there. And other instructors who say it's exhausting, no one can possibly be there all the time. I will argue that there's a, when different people see the same things and have different conclusions, there's usually something else going on. So weakest possibility is a practice effect. Yes, if you aren't used to paying attention, it takes effort and work. Once you are used to paying attention and you practice it, it's actually harder not to pay attention. It's like oversleeping. You know, when you realize that I went through that whole experience and I wasn't really there, you essentially didn't live it. You can't live anything you aren't really aware of. But I think it's actually something that the self-defense community does. And that's one of the things, if you spend all your time in condition yellow or paying attention, looking for bad stuff, yeah, that would be fucking exhausting. It's bad stuff is exhausting. Being scared all the time is exhausting. If I find that when I'm actually paying attention and looking for good stuff, I find it energizing way more than I find it exhausting. I feel better, more alive, more in tune when I am there than when I'm oblivious, not paying attention. I find that more exhausting. So I don't know whether it's a wiring issue. I don't know if it's a practice issue. I suspect heavily it's what you choose to be aware of that affects you, but I can't prove that in any way. I keep glancing over here because I do have some notes because, again, I'm trying to condense down a two-day class. I don't want to forget anything by accident. If I'm forgetting it, it's because it's harder to work in on your own. So that was what I had to say about Cooper. So one of the things that any situational awareness book, lecture, whatever, will talk to you about is, you know, any deviation from baseline, you should pay attention to. And then they totally skip the part about how to set the baseline. So here goes. And this goes into exercises and stuff. And it's very dependent on place and time, obviously. So I encourage you again to go to a place, or whenever you're in a new place, run your senses one at a time. At this time of day, right here, what does it sound like? What's the normal level of sound? What is there? What does it smell like? What do the activities look like? So play with that and play with it like that meditation. I don't suggest that you shut your eyes if you're in a high-risk place, but there's something I call turning off my eyes, where it's like I'm still looking, but I'm not paying attention. I'm concentrating on hearing or concentrating on smell. It was super important working the jail because the bad guys, the inmates, were definitely clever enough to make sure you did not see it coming, which means you had to either hear it coming or be really good at shadows and reflections. And there's some stuff with smell too, because again, you can get super deep into that. Fear sweat smells different than anger sweat. Meth sweat smells different than crack sweat. That's another skill that you can develop. And this is one of the things, I can't be definitive on this, but just if you want to get into your senses, you can smell people getting angry. You can smell people getting afraid. And you can affect that if you choose to. Hearing. So go to this place and look, listen, smell. And especially with hearing, we're kind of used to it with sight. Everything you hear means something. Everything. No sound gets made by accident. Okay, if there is a click, two rigid objects hit each other. How, why, it all means something. This time last year, a month after this, I got the opportunity to take my first real sailing trip. I'd been on like sailboats twice, once for a dinner cruise, once as a teenager. And I got the opportunity, and now I'm sailing across the Atlantic, crew of three on a catamaran. And that, for the first couple nights when I was on watch, it was just every sound I'm hearing means something. I don't know what they mean yet, but they all mean something. And once you figure out what is going on, there's a huge amount of information that's available. But you have to practice. So this is my exercise for setting the baseline, is to go into place and level one, and this goes back into the use your senses, be in your senses, and then attention, and only then interpret. So I would get to that attention phase and then start setting up the questions I needed. You know, what does, one, it was stupidly obvious, but it didn't sound like it at the time, is every so often the catamaran would make a sound that sounded like a cannon going off in the distance. It's like, what the hell? It can't be the sail snapping. It can't be. And it turned out that the bridge between the two holes occasionally would come up and basically belly flop on a wave. It took me, I think, 3 weeks to figure out what that stupid sound was. And the captain knew. I'd asked the captain, he goes, oh, it's a wave, which was a complete answer to him, just wasn't useful to me. So every sound means something. So establishing baselines. I'm going to jump up a little bit. No, I need to lay down some basics here. So everything means something. So some of the language I want you guys to think about is rate, tone, pitch, and volume, RTPV. And this, we use it for voice, but it actually has a really close corollary to activity. Things happen at a certain speed. If a whole bunch of people are, New York sidewalks have a certain speed. That's not the same as it is in any small town, but they have a certain normal speed that's very high. Their rate is very high. Tone, I'll come back to tone. Pitch in a person's voice, if it's high pitched, that's one of our indicators for fear. We know this. Volume, rate. So people talk fast, that also tends to be adrenaline and fear. People that are high pitched, people that are loud, volume, tend to be angry. It's one of those rate, tone, pitch, and volume. So you find the norm, you look for the deviations from the norm. The reason I skip tone is because I am completely non-musical. And every so often my wife tries to explain it to me and it's useless to me. But just as a piano and a saxophone can play the exact same note at the exact same volume, and we know one's a piano, one's a saxophone, we do that with our voices too. And some of our tones, we have an angry tone, we have a fearful tone, we have a gentle tone. So it can sound exactly the same yet not be the same. And this is what I don't dare try to teach, because I can't consciously hear it, I can detect it. But when someone's playing music, someone who is musical hears something totally different than I do, and I'm aware of it. I'm fairly confident I also don't hear it with voices the way some people do, but you can project it, and we're getting projecting. Although that is a side note, everything we say about situational awareness and stuff to be aware of is also stuff that you can choose to either hide or to trying to come up with exactly the right word that doesn't sound too terrible, forge. So it's one of those, I can hide the fact that I'm not confident, or I can forge the fact that I'm confident and pretend to be even if I'm not. If you know what confidence sounds like, you can fake it. And there is almost no difference between faking bravery and bravery, because it doesn't matter how scared you are. If I'm going to fake it and do it anyway, that's exactly what brave people do. So just get over it. There's no difference. So when you're looking at groups, movement, what are the movement pathways? Rate, tone, pitch, and volume. Proxemics, and I'm running through this fast, but these are important. So in any new culture, what are the rules for eye contact? Who looks in whose eyes, who doesn't? For how long, how intense? How close they stand, proxemics. What is the normal friend distance? What's the acquaintance distance? What's the good friend distance? And these are all readable. They're culturally very different, but they're extremely readable. And within that, between those two and then elevation, how they stand in position to exits and things like that, it's very easy to pick out the leader of a group. So This is right. We all know this. And this is one of the things that feels sometimes weird teaching this, because we all know this on some level. That's how we can interact. But it's really hard to improve a subconscious skill. So let's see. I kind of want to go off on a tangent. There's a thing called Locard's exchange principle. And this is the idea that any two objects that touch each other leave a permanent impression on each other. And this is why we have forensics looking at fingerprints, because that finger touched something, it left an impression. The striker on a handgun left an impression. The striations in the barrel left an impression. Your history has left huge impressions on you that can be read sometimes. If certain horrible things happen to you at certain stages of life, you will develop defense mechanisms that are visible later, years later, even when they aren't appropriate. And this is one, I'm not going to go into those skills directly with people I don't know, because it's really easy to sit there and go, oh, that's a clue that you were molested as a child. Tell me all about it. When the person is hanging with you just because you don't treat them differently. And one of the most fucked up things that we do is when people are coping well, and then we decide that we want to help them and start treating them differently. That's, anyway, it's usually better just to leave it alone. If people are hanging with you because they like hanging with you, don't change that dynamic. And this is one of the things with that kind of knowledge. People watching. And this is another drill I encourage you to do. So, and Dan's done this, but go to a public place. I like fairs and markets and street festivals where you get a bunch of different activity, find a quiet place to just watch people. They don't need to know. This is one of my gestures I use to put me in the uncle category, so that no one sees me a threat or actually thinks I'm watching him or anything. I'm just casually. Think about Columbo. If anyone is old enough to remember Columbo, no one ever saw him as a threat. He caught all the bad guys. No one ever saw him as a threat. And that was the body language here. So when you're people watching, I encourage you first to start with storytelling. And storytelling is the idea to let your intuition handle this. If someone draws your attention, let your intuition pop a story into your head. Don't force it. Don't care whether you're right or wrong. Just let it go, or let it run. Then you can sit there, okay, I saw or I felt this. I saw that couple, and I thought that this is a walk that they go on every day. They've been married for a long time. Okay, so that was my story. Where did it come from? You're looking at, okay, well, they were standing close. They were communicating without talking. They weren't looking where they were going. They weren't looking around like they were, okay, that's why my subconscious read this as a long-term couple. We're better at this than we think. We can get better as we do it consciously. One thing I'm going to throw out is that a lot of really competitive people are going to want to know if they're right. They're going to exhaust all. And I really encourage you not to care. It's you're almost always right, but not necessarily in the way that you think. So you'll see the couple and say that it's not a long relationship. They're really uncomfortable around each other, but it actually is a long relationship and they're having a fight right now. That doesn't mean you saw it wrong. That means you interpreted it wrong. Does everyone get what I'm saying? So I really encourage you, if you're going to play this game, to play it until it's so much fun that you wouldn't quit, even if you were wrong a couple times, before you started looking at that. Before you started looking at your accuracy. One of the things that you have to do in your training is you have to manage your own happiness level with it. And if you're too competitive with yourself and you have too many losses early, then you just give up. It's one of those, so arrange for yourself to either have your wins or to not care about it until you're liking it enough that has less power over you. So one of the internal things. So storytelling. And this goes into cold reading. Cold reading is, you know, what can I look at you and tell about you? Okay. Tom's got his Japanese calligraphy off to the side, Japanese or Chinese calligraphy off to the side. He's got his spider plants. He's got the trim goatee. You know, we pick this stuff up. So I prefer you to work with your intuition, but if you need tools, the things I look at most are physicality, the way people move. You can see old injuries. You can see certain levels of old injuries and realize you don't get those injuries unless you're pretty freaking athletic at some point. Those are not, you know, that knee limp is not, I've been sitting behind a desk and I got overweight and I tweaked my knee limp. I've been fighting for a really long time. That shoulder, that arm is longer than the other arm. That's there for a reason. Something happened and happens in certain sports. So physicality is really huge to me. The second thing I look at specifically are, I'll say eyes, what they look at. People look at things that they like. They try not to look at things that they get in trouble for looking at. And this is, if you've ever had the, it is really easy generally to spot child molesters and sexual predators. They have a vibe, and I always hated saying that. It was really accurate, but it's useless. Telling other people to have a vibe does not have to develop it. And I was talking to a friend of mine, Terry Trahan, and he goes, oh, I know. Child molesters are ones that try not to look at children. People that like kids watch kids. Kids are fun. They're little funny monkeys that do all kinds of crazy stuff. They're great. But people that know that they'll get in trouble for watching kids, their eyes kind of slide towards them and they yank themselves back. And that was the thing that we, as in everyone that's ever worked around criminals, have been subconsciously picking up forever. But it took Terry to point out. So people look at what they like. They look at things that horrify or fascinate them, but not at things that actually make them uncomfortable. And they tend not to look at things that will get them in trouble, or try not to look at things that will get them in trouble. And the harder the compulsion is, then the less successful they are at trying. So eyes. The third thing that I look at that's big for me is clothing, because none of you got dressed by accident this morning. You can tell yourself you did, but you did not. You picked your clothes. And I just grabbed what was on top. It was on top of your pile for a reason. You owned it for a reason. So one of the things to look at generally, okay, everyone picked, they either chose clothes to blend in or they chose clothes to stand out. Blending in my opinion, actually gives more away, because it tells you who they think they belong with or who they aspire to belong with. When someone tries to blend in unsuccessfully, that gives a bunch of information. So specific examples of that. Had a guy come in from another country, middle-aged, balding, and he's wearing pastel shorts, flip-flops, and a checkered shirt, pink. Okay. And this was cool because I'd flown in on the same airline. That was an ad that was in the airline magazine. And he thought, that's how Americans dress. And the first thing he did when he landed was go and buy that set of clothes, because he was trying to blend in. But he was blending in so skillfully that he didn't get that that's how the imaginary models in magazines dress, not people, and also not his age group. But the choice of clothing, you could tell which airline he'd flown in on, because that was where the ad was. So if you're super lucky, and that took super luck. I had to fly in on the same thing, see the magazine, be kind of repelled by the same advertisement, so I remembered it. Because it was so dorky. And one of the things, I'm going to go off on the other side. In the self-defense universe of bad things actually happening, it's cool to be good. It's better to be invisible and good. I like being invisible. One of the things that you will hear, and people actually get competitive about it, is I want to sit with my back to the wall and in the corner where I can see everything. Mm. It's like, okay, so you're a bad guy. Who the fuck do you shoot first? I shoot that guy first. If I'm coming in as a bad guy, it's whoever has their back to the wall, especially if they're wearing the 5'11 pants, and just shoot them. Just save a bunch of time. If you can get the same information by sitting in the at the bar with a big mirror, so you can see all the shit the obvious guy can see, but no one's going to notice you doing it, this is better. So this is one of the things with Gray Man was, I hopefully it's died down now, but it's like the self-defense, especially the handgun community's idea of being invisible. And most of them sucked at it because it's absolutely impossible to be invisible while trying to subconsciously brag about how good you are at being invisible. You just can't do it. It takes a level of humility that most people couldn't access. So I'm circling back on the eye thing, eye and clothing. If you want to not be noticed, one of the hardest things to do is to look at nothing. That is some of the weirdest, most stilted body language you will ever see. If you're trying to watch somebody, but you don't want them to know you're watching them, so you try not to look at anything, humans never look at nothing. So within that, if you're going to fake, if you're going to go into that forging on eye contact on what you look at, look at something. Okay. All right. And I'm, for those of you that are reading or following along, it's like Tom is the only one I can see. So I'm really relying on his nodding and stuff. So when you hear me, yeah, you get it. I'm talking about Tom, but hopefully I'm talking to you guys. So close, whether they're trying to blend in, whether they're doing it skillfully. And if they're trying to stand out, there's a message. The message, my experience really close to universally is that secure people have no interest in drawing attention. That seems to be mostly insecure thing. And what I kick it back to nature is like, if you name any predator, any high-end predator, they're camouflaged. Tigers are designed to blend into grassland. Lions are designed to blend in dried up grass on the savannah. Leopards look like light shining through leaves. No real predator ever tattoos "I'm a predator" on their face. It doesn't work for them. It just saying. So that when someone is trying to send a message, I tend to scout for the underlying insecurity, because that's usually what's there, and it's usually more useful to me than what they're actually saying or think that they're saying. within this, you can get really weird about cold reading and people reading, and it goes back to it. Sometimes a cigar is just a cigar. It's like, he's got his hands in his pockets. You know, it's actually kind of cold. That's okay. It's so everything means something, but not everything means something important. Okay. I have this whole big threat assessment, which is more specific than I want to do today. And we've got about 10 more minutes. So I want to talk about something that I've never heard anyone. I've actually never heard outside some very specialized stuff. So active intelligence gathering. We tend to think of situational awareness as, whether we realize or not, as something somewhat passive. It's like, I'm here and I see this. But sometimes you have to go out and hunt down the information. So I want to give some quick advice on that. I break it down into three basic skills, or two really, because I combine map recon and research. So map recon is short for map reconnaissance, which is you get out the map and you look at it and you know where the streets are, or in the wilderness, you know where the mountains are. But it's more to it than that, it's research. So for us, if you're, for instance, going to a new country, you have to look into that country. The CIA actually has an open source travel advisory for people that tells them some of this stuff, some of the stuff you have to dig into. I have a list that I don't think I really have time to go through now. Excuse me. COVID. Figure out where all the places you might need help are, where the ambulances are, where the consulates are, where the embassies are. Figure out how to get out of the country if you have to. In certain circumstances, that means how to get out of the country illegally if you have to. What's the communication network? Is there cell services compatible with yours? Do you need to get a cell phone there? Is it legal to get a cell phone there without putting yourself on a watch list? Are there taboo subjects? Are there things, you know, there's stuff that if you want to have a good conversation or a good friendly relationship in the US, you don't talk about right now. Not until the election's over, and maybe not till like 4 months after that. Every country has something like that you shouldn't be talking about, not unless the other person initiates, and then you generally just shut up and listen. Are there attitudes towards whatever group you represent that you need to know about before you go in? How does the banking system work? Will your credit card be accepted? Is there cash? When I was in Iraq, there were no functioning banks. And that's just wrapping your head around that. You know, no cards, weirdly devalued currency. So that map recon and research is really important. Second, and I'll circle back around, elicitation. Developing the skill at getting people to talk more than they want or more than they should. And generally, with a little bit of active listening, that's very easy. And if you have not taken an active listening course, I encourage that you do. That said, some of those courses are really long, and everything involved in active listening takes about 4 minutes to really get down. It's not a hard skill. It's listening. But within that, how to ask questions to get people to give up more information, and then how to analyze that. So This is the art of having a good conversation. It sounds like spook stuff when we put it in the concept of this contest, but this, you know, in circles, this is just being a good conversationalist. That's all. Ask questions, ask more questions, nod, give them encouragement, ask deeper questions. Are those some side skills? To get more information sometimes, and I'll throw out just two real quick ones just for examples. As a rule, if I share a deeply personal story, almost everyone is compelled to share an equally deeply personal story. Mine didn't have to be true. If I want to milk someone out, that's a great way to do it. Another one is sometimes I will say something very authoritatively that is flat out wrong to get people to correct me. And I think I've had more people violate classified information with that tactic than anything else. Tell them what their job is, be wrong. They tell you what their job is. And sometimes that's information they never should have given up. So just two examples. So this is a skill that you can develop, and it's a huge skill, the solicitation thing. Within the analysis, there's an entire branch of study. And a lot of this is right on the edge of pseudoscience. It's like a lot of the... I have to talk about truth detection. Is right on the edge of pseudoscience. It kind of works, but when you actually dig into it too much scientifically, it's like, yeah, maybe it works. No one, they only pretend they know why. So content analysis is one of those. When you look at the word choices people make, it tells you a lot about their preconceptions. One example, oh, this sounds terrible. If you like NPR, I love NPR. For practicing this, because they don't think they're biased. They think they're simply right. And so there's this righteous. So it's one of those things. If an 18-year-old died under these circumstances, it's an 18-year-old child. If an 18-year-old died under these circumstances, it's an 18-year-old man. You can interpret which of those they think certain things about. If it's one subject, it's protests and solidarity. If it's a different subject, it's copycat riots. So those are just two examples from NPR on the same day. And I love listening to them because it gives me great practice in picking out, because again, most biases are subconscious. There aren't a lot of conscious biases. And content analysis is one way that you can start picking out other people's subconscious biases. I'm trying to run through this quick. So boom. Okay, so who to elicitate, I think, is the next thing. Who to get information from. We have one of the rules. If there ever is a violent encounter, there could be legal consequences, medical consequences, psychological consequences. But one of the ones we don't talk about much is retaliation. And in certain areas, especially live in that area, that is actually the biggest concern. If someone attacks you and you put him down, well, he's got brothers and cousins, or he's a member of this group that can't afford to have their reputation be smirched, or he's a member of this group that don't care cost of doing the business. They'll just laugh at him because he's an idiot. Shouldn't have got his ass kicked. And it's really hard to know that. So the people that tend to be most plugged in, if it's a community policing area, then the cops will actually be pretty good at it. If it's not, they might not. They might just patrol through there, not know anybody. But the local bartenders tend to be really good at that. And there's an old, from the Maquis in the French Resistance, World War II, they called it, if I remember correctly, activating Museblin, which is basically be nice to the kids. Kids see everything. No one knows them seeing everything. And if you're their primary source of candy, they don't want you to die. So they'll tell you stuff. And this breaks down to in an office thing, there tends to be a group of people that are considered very low status. And if I've come to feel that these people are jerks so much, it's hard for me not to just assume everyone thinks they're jerks. But they're most of the people are jerks and treat them like they're low status, which is totally unnecessary. They're doing important work. So if you say hi, ask them how their kids are doing, but basically treat them like human beings, then they become an incredible source of intelligence, incredible source of information. I guarantee you that the personal assistant of the boss and the janitors know more about what's going on in that company than any of the vice presidents do. So if it's about gathering intelligence, those are the people you want to be your friends. So I've got us at 12 minutes to go. You have some wrap up, Joe, and we were going to ask about questions.
If you need to, you can go until about 5 till.
Woohoo. Okay. All right. So here's your list. Have your notebooks ready. I said this would be homework heavy. So here are the field exercises. This is what I want to wrap up with. So exercise number one, access a local social media neighborhood group. Almost no matter where you live, especially if you live in any city, there is a Facebook group almost for sure dedicated to all the crap going on in your neighborhood. It will be a more accurate and up-to-date list of crimes, including the crimes that people didn't bother to report. Missing dogs. There's one that I know of where their person who's lived there forever, their weather predictions are better than the local meteorologist by an order of magnitude. So it's ideally find that for your area and you can lurk there. But if you're going somewhere else, check that out too. But as an exercise, find one. Don't care if it's your city. It's your homework. It's not mine. Good. All right. Second, these are the exercises at the end of the class. So we move through. We have a series of scavenger hunts. One of the paradigms for survival is the military's move, shoot, and communicate. Those are three things you have to be able to do: is move, shoot, and communicate. You can change the shoot to whatever your job is that you need to get done. If you're a teacher, you've got to get there. That's the move. You've got to communicate, but you also have to get the information into their heads. So that's your shoot. So the move, shoot, and communicate scavenger hunt. And please do not actually steal the stuff. I did have a guy in the UK do that. Send him on the scavenger hunt, and he came back with, and he did so much shoplifting. He's like, oh my fucking God. So please don't actually steal things from people when you're doing the exercise. But move, shoot, you can find transport, find a vehicle that you could take from somebody if necessary. Something that could get you moving fast. Communications. Is there a cell phone you could snatch? And in this one, because depending on how bad the environment, I do encourage you to, is there a weapon that you could access? It doesn't have to be a super high-end weapon, just something. The scavenger hunt too, and this is mostly for outdoors, although there's a urban called a bum version of it. But can you find food, potable water or water you can fix, a place to stay warm, shelter, and a way to make a fire? If you can access those four things, you're probably going to be all right. Scavenger hunt three. This is the urban hope version. We call it the hobo. Find a place where you could sleep safely and a place you could hide your stuff if you couldn't carry it. So if you've got to go into a place where there's, you know, you've got to go into the courthouse, they've got metal detectors and stuff, where would you hide your stuff so other people are unlikely to find it, but you could get back to it? Okay, scavenger hunt four, and I encourage this just as a habit. Look for exits, fire extinguishers, first aid kits, security cameras. Play the game. Good on that? Next exercise is gather improvised weapons. And I actually want to back up once because there's something better than that. So affordances is the idea that how you see something controls how you can use it. Okay, so if you see a chair and the only affordances in your hair is I can read there, I can sit there, I can cuddle there, then you won't think about using it to block a door closed or as a grapnel or as tearing it up to see if the cushions can absorb blood. So one of the exercises is the 20 uses drill. And you pick any random item and you come up with 20 uses for that item, for a spoon or a pen, that have nothing to do with what the item is designed for. So 20 uses for a spoon that don't involve scooping or eating. 20 uses for a pen that don't involve writing. As you get into this habit, world gets way easier because you can use a lot of things. And that goes back because one of the gills is one of the drills is to find improvised weapons, find things you could use as weapons. As your affordances get wider, a whole bunch of things you can use as weapons, especially when you start combining them. We talked about competitive people watching or the people watching cold reading. We do that competitively. We get them all, have a coffee. Terry is great at it. Tammy R. McCacken is a PsyD. She's a psychologist and counselor. Doc Kennedy, same. And we just go to places and compete on how well we can read people and how well we can explain it. Strike up a conversation with a stranger, find out where they were born, where they live now, doesn't have to be the exact address, what they do for a living, and don't give up the same information about yourself. We talked about the grounding or centering drill, the five things you hear, five things you smell, five things you touch. Get to the point where you can do that moving and without your eyes shut. Yeah, I think that's it. There's another list about five exercises, but a lot of them are creepy. So, yeah. Do this talking. And 5 till, I think we're right on schedule.
Indeed, we are. That is a lot of homework.
I Okay, so embodiment, and we were joking before we even started that I'm not sure embodiment is a real word or what it means, but it's but to me it's like so easy to, I've read 10 books on this and I've heard a bunch of lectures, I listen to a bunch of podcasts, and I'm getting to the point now, if someone says they're a visual learner, I say, I think in my head, so what you're saying is you're too lazy to actually work out and you like watching videos. And that's the thing, unless you do this, you know, I like this information. I think it's cool and useful. But if you just hear it and you never actually go out and do it, if you don't, you know, why the fuck are you here? It's embodiment means, if it means anything, it means living it. It means doing what you're talking about. So yeah, anyway, that's it. That's all I say about that.
So thank you for that great session. Actually got a lot out of it. Some insights I had never really actually thought of before. Mm-hmm. So if you all enjoyed this conversation and you would like to have it longer or any of the other great conversations that we have had here on the this channel and all those other channels, it is available for free for the next 48 hours and then you can acquire the package. There are several different options for packages. After the conference, the price is going up. So now is the time. And Rory, what would be your number one tip for embodiment, or your just number one tip?
My number one tip, well, yeah, same thing if we're using the word the same, but it's basically get off your ass. It's mm-hmm. Why are you seeing their string and scream? This entire big fucking world out there. It's the thing I love about martial arts is that, yeah, lifting weights. Well, no, lifting weights sucks. It's boring. Throwing people downstairs is awesome. So.
I can't argue the whole throwing people because that's kind of what I do too. So.
You know why people like slinkies, right?
I'm almost afraid to ask. Why do they like slinkies?
Pretty much useless. It's fun to push them down the stairs.
This is true. So if you want more from Rory, his website and information is in the chat.
Cool.
And Rory, thank you very much for coming. It has been a pleasure. Cool. And I encourage everyone, buy some books. He's got great books.
Yeah, more importantly, get off your ass, go out and look at the world.
Get off your ass and get out and look at the world.
Books absolutely. Are for, yeah, books are for when you're too injured to actually go train.
Thank you for coming. It's been a pleasure. Okay.